Everybody knows the history, and the history is that Hanukkah took place in the 4th century BCE, and the Syrian Greeks invaded Israel, and they were terrible in terms of how they persecuted and killed the Jews and did not allow the Jews to serve God. They invaded the temple, they despoiled the temple, etc. And we read the story that the priests, Matityahu and his sons, and the entire group of priests rallied together, a ragtag group of Jews, and they routed the Syrian Greeks, and the Greeks were chased out of the land of Israel. And we celebrate the holiday. Wow, that's great. Now, what happened after the holiday? What happened after the Greeks were left out of Israel, chased out of Israel? You wonder. So what happened was the priests decided that they are going to become the kings. They're going to be the monarchs. There's going to be royalty. Now, something about the history of the Second Temple period. You notice that the Second Temple period began approximately the year 516, approximately 516 BC. That's when Ezra, Nehemiah, Zerubbabel, Ben Shealtiel, Yeshua, Cohen Gadol. We read that in the Haftorah this Saturday. They came back with 56,000 Jews. And did you notice that there was no king? The great-grandson of Tzidkiyo, I should say the grandson of Tzidkiyo, Hamelech, the last king of Israel, was Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel. He was there. He came in the first wave together with Nehemiah and Yahushua Kohen Gadol. They could easily have made him into the king. They could have restored the monarchy. They never did. And it went on for hundreds of years that there was no king. It was a temple-centered society. The high priests ran the entire country, and that was the nature of the government. It was the high priest together with the Sanhedrin, together with the rabbis, but there was no monarchy, there was no royalty. And then the Hasmoneans, who were basically the leaders because they were the priests, they decided to renew the monarchy and they became the kings. Now, you know from our own government, that's a tripartite government, and we have a system of checks and balances. The executive, the legislative, the judicial branch, and they don't work together in concert, but they work parallel to make sure that everybody's doing the right thing. And that's how the Jews used to be. There were different branches of government for checks and balances, but now the priests, the Hashmonaim, the Hasmoneans, took over the monarchy. And that's a lot. Okay, so that's the situation. So the rabbis of the medieval period are looking at this historical situation and they're analyzing it from different vantage points. So the first, we're going to read the Ramban, Nachmanides. He lives in the 13th century, and he's Spanish. He's a king. He knows of the king. There are kings that run, that's it. That was the system of government in the medieval world, kings, divine right of kings. So he well understands what a king is. But he has the following problem. When Yaakov was on his deathbed, he blessed all of the children. And each child got a different blessing and a different position in the Jewish people. The fourth son, Yehuda, got a very special position from his father. He says to Yehuda, "Lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda umechokek mi bein raglav ad ki yavo shilo velo yikat hamim." Whoa. There shall never deviate from the monarchy and royalty of Israel anyone who is not from the tribe of Judah. Moreover, any time there is a ruler, any time there is a person in a position of leadership, they shall come from the tribe of Yehuda. And we know that King David was from the tribe of Yehuda. And his son Shlomo was from Yehuda. Rehoboam was from Yehuda. All of the kings in that dynasty of the first temple period were from Yehuda. They all were descendants of King David. And King David was the son of Yishai. We read the book of Ruth and we know that it all comes from Boaz. And it all comes from Boaz, who was a scion in the house of Judah. So the Ramban is very troubled by the rule of the Hasmoneans. They are from the tribe of Levi, the priests. How'd that happen? So let's read. It's a long Ramban. We're not going to read all of it. We're going to read some of it. So he writes, and I'll translate as we go along. Okay, I see that it's up. Thank you, Julian. Lo yasur sheva mi Yehuda ein inyano shelo yasur lo olam. It doesn't mean that there will never not be a king. There will be a king. There will times not to be a king. Because we even have in the Torah, when God chastises the Jewish people with exile and near destruction, God says, Yolech Hashem otcha v'et malkacha asher takim alecha el goy asher lo yadata ata v'avotecha. V'inei heimu malkam v'gola ein lehem od melech v'sarim. And as we know from all of our history, we have no king. We don't have any officials because we don't live in Israel. And even in Israel, there's no king. And for 1,000 years, there was no king. And Jacob is not saying now, oh, by the way, guaranteed there'll never be any exile because you'll always have a king from Yehuda, and therefore you'll never be exiled. That's not true. It means that if there's going to be a king or a juridical leader, they are going to come from the brothers, not from the brothers, but from the tribe of Yehuda itself. Anytime there's going to be a king, it has to be from the tribe of Yehuda. Meaning not only a king, but any kind of a person with juridical power. Anybody even appointed by a foreign king to govern the Jewish people, that also has to be from the tribe of Yehuda. And he goes on to explain, we're not going to go into that because it's not our topic, that when there was no longer a king of Israel and the Jews were conquered by the Romans, there was somebody known as a Nasi. And the Nasi always came from, like Hillel HaNasi, Hillel, all of these people only came from the house of King David. And even in exile, out of Israel, there was somebody known as the Reish Geluta, who was the exilarch, and he also had to come from the tribe of Yehuda. Okay? Let's go to the bottom, if you have the page, the bottom of the page, where he says, V'zeh haya onesh hachashmonaim. V'zeh haya onesh hachashmonaim. And for this reason, the Hasmoneans were punished. Now, I just want to say how they were punished. Now, if you know the history, they were actually killed by Herod. Herod killed all of the Hasmonean, anybody who remained from the Hasmoneans, and he became the king, and he was not Jewish. And that was the end of the Hasmonean. Nobody left. Nobody was left from the whole Hasmonean house. Not one was left. That was their punishment, says the Ramban. Even though they were the righteous on high, in other words, not more righteous than they, if not for them, everybody would be Greek, everybody would be Hellenized, and there would be no Torah, no mitzvot. Everybody was killed by the Romans. It was so well known that when there was no survivors of the entire Hasmonean dynasty until the rabbi said, Kol manda amen bet chashmonai ka'etina avdahu, shenichretu kulam ba'avon hazeh. Anybody who claims to be Hasmonean, you know, he's not even Jewish. Because there was nobody that was left. Ba'afal pishaya bezerah shim'on onesh min hatzedukim. The only sin that they had. Now, even though there were some Hasmoneans who became Sadducees, that's not a good thing. But from the house of Matityahu, lo haya mizera Yehuda mibeit David, beisiru hashevet v'amachokek magamrei. They abrogated the rule that was set down by Yaakov Avinu. That they lost the entire melucha. So the Ramban is telling us it was a terrible, terrible sin. Terrible sin that was committed by Matityahu, Kohen Gadol, Chashmona, Uvanav. All of them. And they were all cut off. They were all killed. Nobody was left. Terrible, terrible thing. Terrible. So the question then becomes, is this the view of all the rabbis? So let's look at our next selection, and we'll see that the Rambam Maimonides, that was Rambam Nachmanides. Now the Rambam Maimonides has a totally different view. Okay, so let's look at source number two. So this is the Rambam and the Laws of Hanukkah. Rambam writes, "Bebayit Sheni, Kishemalchu Yavan Gazru Gzeirot Al Yisrael Ubatlu Datam, Lunicha Otam Lasok B'Torah V'Mitzvot." When in the Second Temple period, the Greeks ruled over Israel, and they annulled the religion of the Jews and did not allow them to study the Torah or keep any of the mitzvos. And they pillaged all of the Jews and took all of their money and they took their daughters. And they invaded the Holy Temple and they did terrible things there. But and they caused tremendous distress to the Jewish people. And they caused them, they persecuted them in a tremendous way. Till God had mercy. Until the sons of the Hashmonaim, who were the Kohanim Dolim, they killed the Greeks for Hoshiu Yisrael miyadam, and they saved the Jewish people. Ve'amidu melech men ha-kohanim, v'chazva malchut li-Yisrael, yetera matayim shana ad ha-chorban ha-sheni. That is what happened. That is what happened. And that's where the Hanukkah story comes. The next law, we're not going to read it. And that's, they celebrated the day that the war was over. They celebrated, etc. Okay. So if you read the Rambam, the Rambam certainly does not chastise them. He does not castigate them. He just says it sweetly. Without comment. How could the Rambam have ignored this when it's clearly a prohibition? They should have appointed, there was a Sanhedrin in those days, they should have appointed somebody from Zerah HaMelucha, and they were well known. We know who they were. Nitai Ha'arbeli lived at that time, and he was a great grandson of Zerubbabel. He should have been the king. And yet, that wasn't what took place. And the Rambam just ignores it. And therefore, it would seem like the Rambam views that the legitimate kings over Israel can be from Kohanim. The problem, of course, is that the Rambam himself doesn't believe that. If you look at number three, the Rambam, when he speaks about kings, the laws of Jewish kings, he says, "Ein ma'amidin melech b'tchila, ela al pi beitin shel shedim zekenim v'al pi navin." It has to be with the Sanhedrin or a navin. Now, the truth is, there were no navim in the Second Temple period. This part of the Second Temple, there were no prophets, but there certainly was a Sanhedrin. So, according to the Rambam, he himself tells us that it has to be a special appointment. So, are we saying that the Rambam maintained that the Sanhedrin violated the law as well? It was a conspiracy, special dossier that we have that we can look at to show there was collusion between the Sanhedrin and the Kohanim. So how could the Hashmonaim themselves, knowing the prohibition, and they're called, even the Ramban called Chasidei Elyon, the most righteous people, how do they justify their actions? Now, to answer this question, we can answer this question. Let us look at number four, which is the Rambam himself. Now, the Rambam very famously constructed a belief system for the Jewish people. In case you didn't know what the belief system was, the Rambam said, I can construct one for you. There are 13 seminal principles of the faith. These 13 principles of the Rambam are the central themes upon which Judaism is built. This is the mission statement of the Jewish people. Now, among these 13 principles, there's the 12th principle. And let's look at the 12th principle, which is number four. V'hayisod hashnei masar imot ha-mashiach. The 12th principle is the belief in the arrival of a Messiah. V'hu la'amin, what does that mean? What is that belief? V'hu la'amin u'la'amet shiavo, to believe and to feel that it's true that he will arrive. Don't say, oh, it's so long since he's come. He's not coming. He missed the turn. No. Nope. If he tarries, wait. There is no specific time. Don't try to look at the verses of Daniel or other prophets and try to figure out when he's supposed to come and say, okay, he didn't come. Amru chachamim, tapuach datan shal mechashvei chitzin. May the minds of people trying to figure out when the end of days is blow up. Ulhaamin bo min hagdulavi ahaval akbael lebo'o, etc., etc. And Umasha ne'amar bo al yedei kol navi. Now every single prophet predicted the arrival of the Messiah. Mi Moshe va'ad Malachi. From Moshe, the first prophet of the great prophet of the Jewish people, up until Malachi, the last prophet. Umisha nistapek bo. He's denying a part of the Torah. Here's the part that we need. Is to believe that when the king will come, Melech Mashiach will come, that he will be the direct descendant of David and Solomon. And anybody who denies the veracity of the monarchy that is vouchsafed to this family and this family alone, Areza Kafar Bahashem Ubidivre Nidiav. Wow. So you not only have to believe a Mashiach, but you must believe that he is coming from the house of David. He's a king from the house of David. Okay. So now, let's see if we can put something together and understand the view of the Rambam. Now, you have to know a little Navi for this, and we all know Navi. So but we're going to review it just in case we need a review. Okay, here we go. So in the book of Shmuel, after King David is anointed the king, in he's anointed a king a long time ago, but in the chapter 20 of Shmuel Bet, of 2 Samuel, it speaks about a rebellion. And among the rebellion or the people involved in the rebellion is a person whose name is Sheva ben Bichri. He's known as a villain in Jewish history, Sheva ben Bichri. And the Navi says, Visham nikla ish b'li'al. There was a certain person of a very base quality, who Shmo Sheva ben Bichri Ishimini. I'm reading, you don't have this source. I didn't write the whole thing. I'm just reading it to you, and then the verses that you'll need are right here in number 5. So he was a terrible person. Vayomer, and he said, Ein lanu chelek b'David. I want no part of King David, but lo nachala lo b'ben Yishai, and no legacy in the son of Jesse. Yishai was his father. I want nothing to do with it. What should we do? Ish la'ahalav yelech. Let everybody go back to the tent. You take care of yourself. Autonomy. Total autonomy. No king, no David, no house of Yishai. That's what we should do. Vaya'al kol ish Yisrael me'acharei David, acharei Sheva ben Bichri. And all of the people from the northern kingdom followed Sheva ben Bichri. And they went home and they said, see ya, King David. So the whole southern kingdom followed King David. And this is before there was a split in the kingdom. This is well before the split. Okay. Now, we know that King David commanded his commander-in-chief, his general, Yoav ben Tsruya, got to put down the rebellion. It's a very terrible thing. And the Navi tells us that Sheva ben Bichri went to a city, and he hid out in the city, coward. He hid out in the city, and Yoav came with the troops, and they surrounded the city, etc., etc. And he said, we're not leaving the siege in the city until we get Sheva ben Bichri. He has to be brought to justice for rebelling against the king. So let's look at Pasuk Yud Zayin, number 5. So there was a woman in the city, an older woman in the city. Some say, according to the tradition, that was Serach Bat Asher, who never died.
Are
you the famous general Yoav ben Tsruya? And Vayoma Ani, true.
Listen carefully to my words, she said. And he said, okay.
Matomer Lemor, Taber Yudabu Barishona, Lemor Sho Yishalini Ba'avel Vahim Hitmu.
Okay.
She said, Anochi Shulumea Mune Yisrael Atamavakesh Lamut Irva Imbe Yisrael. Do you want to wipe out the city? There's a siege around the city. Usually a siege was before the invasion of the city and they would kill people.
Lama Tivala Nachalat Hashem, why are you killing Jews?
I'm not here to do any harm.
He put his hand against the king David.
I'm just here for Sheva ben Bichri. Let us have him, and then we are on our way. She said, not a problem, we'll take care of it. And soon, wait outside, and you'll see his head. Bring his head back. Okay, that's what happened. That is exactly what happened. And that's the end of the episode. Okay, so it's a very interesting episode. It's a little bit bloody, not pleasant to read about. And that's the story. Now, if you look at... Now, this is one of the printed sheets. So if you can get to it, I think it's page number 6. Okay. I don't have it in my search engine, so I had to make a copy of the page. Now, this comes from Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik. This is the answer that was given by Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, which is Rabbi Soloveitchik's grandfather. Right? It's all the same genius family. And this is what he says. Let me just get my sheet. And this is what he says. Now, before we get to what he says, if you could just go back to Pasuk Chaf Aleph, number 5, just to read it slowly. I read it slowly the first time, and I'll read it slowly again. We're only here for a person named Sheva ben Bichri. His crime, Nasa Yado Bamelech. He raised his hand against the king. Now, if you live in Israel at this time, and ask, this is not like today, we go out in the streets and say, do you know who the president of the United States is? And most people go, Lincoln. No, that's not what happens. In those days, everybody knew his name was David. Everybody knew that. Yet, when Shmuel HaNavi writes the story, he writes, Nasa Yado Bamelech B'David. Two statements. Against the king, against David. What's the reason? What's the reason? Just say against the king. And what's the difference of what his name is? It's the king. He's a Morid B'Malchut. He rebels against the king. And we're going to talk about rebelling against the king at the very end of this. If we get there. Okay. So what he says is, let me just see if I have that sheet. Oh, here it is. It's page number 6. Is that it? You have to go down. It's downwards. It should be underlined. Ah, there it is. Okay. Ein lo nachelik b'David v'lo nachalal leben Yishai. And the same phrase was used when Sheva ben Bichri made his soliloquy speech at right in front of King David. He said, Ein lo nachelik b'David v'lo nachalal manu b'ben Yishai. It's the same statement. Two things. His Giru Shneim. So he writes, David uben Yishai. Uba divrei hayamim, it says lecha David va'amcha ben Yishai. Hiskir gam ken shnehem David uben Yishai. Right, we know this from the davening. Mashiach ben David. Right, we say that ben Yishai. Abdecha meshukav. Habiur baser tihine beemet hayu shnei bichirot kimforash b'divrei hayamim aleph. Ki bi Yehuda bachar lenagid ubebeit Yehuda beit avi ubebeit ubebnei avi bi ratzal hamlich al kol Yisrael.
הרי דמתחילה הייתה הבחירה על בית ישי. רק אחר כך נבחר דוד מבית ישי להיות לו המלוכה. Now, if you remember the story, God tells Shmuel, go to the house of Yishai, and there you will find the king. God never says the name of the king. And Yishai has a whole bunch of sons. And when Shmuel goes in first, he thinks it's Eliashib because he was tall and he was nice looking and he sounded very smart. So they believed, Judy, it's not going to help you. They had to pick up the tables from the soiree. We had a soiree here Saturday night. None of you were there, so no, I was there. It was a soiree. It was happened to be very nice. Very nice. Nobody had masks. Nobody. And everybody was in close quarters. And there's a variant flying around. So it shows that we are fearless people. Okay. Now, so what was I saying? So he finally... He said, okay, that's the king. God says, no way. No. Hashem yirah le'asher yirah le'levav, Adam yirah le'inayim. And then finally, he couldn't find the right one. And he says to Yishai, are you sure you have no more kids? Because God said, I'm going to find the king here. Yeah, hey, I'm a little punk outside with the. So bring him in. And God says, that's the dude. That's him. So there's something, it was first said to the prophet, Ben Yishai. We're looking for the son of Yishai, and then it turned out to be David Ben Yishai. So he writes, "Vachacharak nivcha David mi Beit Yishai liyot lo hamlucha. Beit Yishai ne'emra b'ha da amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Shmuel ki ra'iti b'banav li melech. I have seen that one of his sons will be the king. Ne'emra b'ze b'chira al Beit Yishai. U'b'ze muvan gam ha'dechtiv sham el tabet al mar'ehu ve'el govah kamato. God says, with the first son, I don't care about how handsome that he's central casting. Doesn't bother. I know his heart. He's not a leader. Now it's a specific person, and it's going to be David. So what Rabbi Soloveitchik here is trying to say is that there are two elements that we have to look at when we deal here with Jewish monarchy. The first element is somebody who is from the house of Yishai. What is special about Yishai? What's special about Yishai is that he is, and we know from the end of the book of Ruth, we know that he is a descendant of Yehuda. That's what's very, very special about him. The second thing that's special about him is that he's Ra'u Liyot Melech. He is the person in personality and in ability. He is the one who can be king. Not everybody who can be king will be a good king. So we're looking for somebody who is a good king. Okay. So before we continue, because we're going to continue and we're going to see there's a very good answer to what's happening with that idea. Let's say something about kingship among the Jews. Now, is kingship a good thing or a bad thing? Is having a king something that God said, when you get into the land of Israel, I want you to appoint a king? Is that what happened? Or better yet, if you look at the actual role of the king, they come to Shmuel. They come to the prophet Shmuel and say, we want a king. We want a king. And what does Shmuel say to them? You have a king. He's God. What do you need a king for? So the prophet Shmuel does not think that kingship is a good idea. You can do very well with God as the king. And yet the people are demanding a king. But then again, also in the book of Dvarim, there was a verse that when you come, Kitavo ala aretz va omra, and you will say, Tenu aleinu melech, when you will demand to have a king, the next verse is Som Tavsim Amelach Alech Amelach. Okay, appoint a king. So then, the very origin of kingship is a very difficult matter. It's the kind of a thing that you shouldn't want, but if you demand it, if you want it, you're going to get it. That's why Shmuel says, let me just first tell you the din ha-hamelech. Let me tell you what you're going to get when you get a king. And he tells them all kinds of very intrusive things. And the people say, we don't mind. We don't mind. Give us inflation at 10% and gas at $8 a gallon. We don't really care. We just want a king, not a Republican king. We want a king, a Democratic king. That's what we want, no matter what. So it's very, very dubious. It's very, 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 very difficult. Now, let's ask ourselves a question. Let's ask the Ramban a question. Ramban, who's the first king of Israel? Who's the first king of Israel? King David? No. King Saul. Shaul HaMelech is the first king. What tribe does he come from? He comes from Binyamin. He's not from Yehuda. Lo Yasu Shevet MiYehuda. How did that happen? And Shmuel HaNavi is the one who appoints Saul. He doesn't know this law, Lo Yasu Shevet MiYehuda. He doesn't know that the Rambam says you need a Sanhedrin. People in Sanhedrin didn't know the law. How is that possible? How is that possible? So the Ramban asks this question in the Devarim and he answers. I didn't include it here because too many sources as this. This is what the Ramban says. He says, in fact, when David was appointed king of Israel, his rule, his kingship was different than the rule of Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech was a popular king, meaning that the people wanted him to be the king. The Navi even says, what was attractive about Shaul HaMelech? First of all, he was very, very smart. He was very, very handsome. But one of the qualities that defined him, Mishichmo ulamala mikol adam, he was exceedingly tall. And what does that have to do with being a king, to be exceedingly tall? Maybe you have to be tall, but you don't have to be 6'9". That's for basketball. That's not for kingship. So what you see, says the Ramban, is that he was a popular figure who the people clamored to have, and that's how he became king, by popular acclamation. That's how he became the king. He wasn't appointed by God, per se, but he was the king. He was the king nonetheless. But once a king is chosen from the house of David, you can never, ever have a king who's not from the house of David, because God not only wants to be Lo Yasu Shevet MiYehuda, but it has to be from the house of Yishai. That's the king. It's more specific than being from the tribe of Yehuda. It's got to be from the house of Yishai. Once that happens, it can never ever be changed. Now, where do you see that it can never be changed? You see it almost immediately in the dynasty of King David. Because if you remember the Navi, what happens in the Navi? So King David rules for 40 years. And then his son Shlomo rules for 40 years. Shlomo was an incredible king. There were no wars during his time. Prosperity. Kesef lo nechshav lemu'uma. He went in the streets. Everything was made out of silver. Everything was perfect in his time. When Shlomo HaMelech dies, he has a son, Rehavam, who takes over. Was Rehavam a good king? No. He was a horrible king. He was a terrible king. And the people come to the Navi and they say, we don't want him to be the king. So Yeravam ben Nevat becomes the king for Yisrael. And most of the people follow Yeravam ben Nevat to the northern kingdom because he's a benevolent king, as opposed to Rehavam. But they could do nothing with Rehavam. They could not change. Shaul was by popular acclamation, but no other king can be by popular acclamation once King David rules, once there's a king from Malchut Beit David. Okay? And that is why Sheva ben Bechri, he just said, I don't like the king. I don't want the king. You raise your hand not only against the king, but against Ben Yishai, and that's your sin. The sin is you're going against God. That's why you have to be punished. Now, another way of looking at, because we're trying to understand the Rambam, Maimonides, was saying that he seems to have been oblivious to the law. Now, this statement, Lo Yasur Shevet MiYehuda Mechokek Ben Maglav, so the Ramban understands this as a demand, as a command, as a missive. This is how it has to be. Now, you can read it a different way. You can read Lo Yasur Shevet MiYehuda as a promise. God is Yaakov speaking prophetically, and he says, I'm channeling God. And God said, there will never be a king. Once King David starts to reign, there will never, ever be a king other than from Shevet Yehuda. Maybe that's what it means. And the question is that a possibility? So let's look at the Ran. Drushas HaRan. Okay. So this we also have to, we can't do all of it because it's going to take much too long. So let me just get it. So, four. No, it's hard when you have the sheets and then other sheets. Hard to find everything. So that'd be seven. No. What number is that?
Number eight.
It's eight. I have all my sheets mixed up. Let me get number eight. Four, five.
Oh well, it's on sheet three, but it is number eight source. But
yeah, I know that, but I'm looking for it. Okay. Let me just 1 second. Oh, I have it. I have all the sheets. I just mixed up the papers. So this is what he says. Avalafi dati. Now the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim Gurundi, he's a 15th century, 14th into 15th century Spanish rabbi. He says, "Aval ledati haparasha hazot memezet lechol shevet v'shevet mashiik." I look at the blessings of Yaakov as a prediction of what will take place for all of the tribes. So, let's go to the next to the last line, end of the line. Ma'amar lo yasur shevet miYehuda, and he says to his fourth son Yehuda, there will never be a ruler other than from Yehuda. Klomar, im sheyechtu malkeha adayin lo yagia onsham shetistalek v'tasur mehem amelucha legamrei. Even if they are wicked kings, not worthy of being king over Israel, even so, I will not remove them. And we know from the first temple period, from what we know, most of the kings of Yehuda were wicked. Right? You have Menashe, you have really a lot of bad people. V'hinei ramaz lo ma'amar Hashem yitbarach. Let's move down to the next paragraph. You can read all of that at home. It's not pertinent to our. V'chein malchut Sha'ul eino kushya atzleinu. Because he agrees that you have to have kings from Yehuda. Well, what about Sha'ul? Afal pi shelo hayu b'yamav Moshel b'shevet Yehuda, sheluhu lo heftiho shelo yakum la'olam melech ele mishipto kamo sheperashnu. Aval hodiya sheme'et sheitchil malchutam lo tasur v'lo tipsak v'gamre. V'lechein Malach Sha'ul, afal pi shelo haya mishevet Yehuda, Moshel v'melech, v'fi shelo haya b'shevet Yehuda, ra'ul l'malchuto kamohu. Because before there was ever a king, the most worthy person to be the king was Sha'ul. Ka'asher he'id ha'katuv. He doesn't agree with the Ramban about the popular acclaim. No, he happened to have been maybe popular acclaim, but he certainly was the most worthy. And there was nobody from the tribe of Yehuda as worthy as him. And therefore, below hifticho Yaakov, liYehuda elo shemeit shetatchil lo hamalchut lo tasur mimenu. Ve'in ha'asara nofelat elo b'divar shekfar hitchil. You can't remove something until it first starts. And then also, our issue. Ve'in mimalchei chashmonai al zeh akush yakval. Why? Ki lo yavticho ha'katuv liYehuda rak kol yimei heyot hamam pshala liYisrael. Now, there are independent governments and there are puppet governments. United States of America, independent, totally independent. However, Ukraine, puppet of Soviet Union. Totally. And you have many countries like that are just puppets. Syria, a puppet of Iran. They're not independent, not at all independent. And the kings that they put up, they only rule by the pleasure of the host country or the conquering country or the dominant country. And that is exactly what was taking place in the Second Temple period. Why were there no kings in the first part of the Second Commonwealth? Because nobody would let them, because they were ruled by the Persians and they were ruled by the Medians, and there was no way for them to, and Babylonians, and there was no way for them to have a king. They wouldn't allow it. They were a vassal state of whoever the dominant empire was. What they were doing was they were just holding on to the seat, the Melech Paras for Rome, for the Persians and for the Romans. In other words, it's possible to have somebody who is in charge of a government, and you can call the person a king because that's what they call people who are in charge of governments, but it's not the kind of kingdom that was vouchsafed to Yehuda. That's when you're an independent government. That's when you're ruling yourself. Whoever, when it's self-rule, then it has to be from the tribe of Yehuda. And that's exactly what, we're not going to read it, but that's what the Abarbanel says as well. And that's how he sees the situation as well. So if you take this together and you look at it from the position of the Ran, that it's not a promise that there can be no king, but it's once that, but it's just going to be that way, that a king who's an independent country, that is going to be only from the tribe of Yehuda. As it happens, we didn't fully explore the Rambam. What the Rambam actually calls the Messiah, Melech HaMashiach. You know that from Lubavitch, from Chabad, who they called their rabbi, Melech HaMashiach. But they actually took the phrase from the Rambam. The Rambam maintains that the Mashiach, the Messiah, has to be a king. And he's going to be from Malchut Beit David. Why? Let's say Netanyahu is better. Let's make Netanyahu the king. Let's say someone else is better. But it's because, keep in mind what the Rambam says, what is emblematic of the Messianic era? Ein bein olam hazeh liyamot ha-mashiach ela shiabud malchiyot bulvad. The only change that takes place, this is his position. It's the position of Shmuel in the Talmud. The only change that takes place when the Messiah comes is that Israel is totally independent. That's it. They don't have to worry about, Biden says, about building a few houses in the territories. Where is that? Shmuel. Omar Shmuel. Ein ben olam hazeh le olam haba le shibud malchiyot b'vavai. If you want to look it up, it's Sad Chet Amar Aleph in Sanhedrin. It says it a few places. And the Rambam actually says that. In Hilchot Malachim, if you look at Perek Yud Bet in Hilchot Malachim, it's an interesting Rambam anyway to read. If you have a few minutes, where the Rambam literally says that nothing will change except for political independence. So for the Rambam, that's what a king is. A king is somebody who rules when he's independent. He doesn't have to worry about what other people are saying. And therefore, what one can say is, or at least what one could theorize, is that there are two different kinds of monarchies among the Jewish people. There's a monarchy of just leading, and there's a monarchy which is of independence, as the Ran says. But let's go to another source, one more source. We're skipping the Abarbanel because it's just echoing. It has some interesting things, but it's really just echoing what the Ran says. Let's go to the last source. Okay, that's it. That's the last source. Okay, excellent. Okay, now this is Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Chayes, who was a very, very great rabbi of the 19th century, almost contemporary of the 19th century. And he has a theory. Wait a minute.
8. Oh, here it is. Of course, it'll be the last page. Okay. And if you look on page, the bottom of page 8, the very bottom, it's a left-hand column, the bottom paragraph, that's it. Now, he's dealing with how Shmuel HaNavi went about appointing the king. That's what he's dealing with. He says, L'chein nir'al li davar chadash. V'chol mishpitei ha-melucha heima rak inyan hitkashrut bein ha-melech la'am. What is a king? A king is somebody who represents the people. That's the job of a king, to represent the people. V'al ofanim halalu no'adu hatzadim. V'ha'am hitratzu levater honam u'chusham l'tovat haklal. Shmuel says to them, they're going to go into your fields and they're going to take your crops for the king, king's table. They're going to take your sons and impress them into the army for the king's army. They're going to need people working in the palace. They're going to take your daughters to work in the palace. They're going to make roads for the king. And they're going to go right through your property, eminent domain. That's what's going to happen. Do you want a king? And they said, yes. Yes, yeah, absolutely. We accept upon ourselves what he calls itratzu levater honam uruchusham letovat haklal, because it's for the betterment of the country and for the population to have a king. And therefore, we're willing to forego so many things to have a king. Liyot davar echad lidor asher yetzei lifneihem v'yilachem l'cholpeihem, because it represents security. This king is going to fight the war. So if there's an invasion, if there are terrorists, so he's going to take care of that for us. And the king represents all of the people, and whatever he does is for the good of all of the people. Even if it's something that has only to do with his honor, like somebody speaks fresh to him. What's the rule if you speak fresh to the king? Jewish king. You get killed. It's called Morid B'Malchut. And you can try that in Saudi Arabia today and you'll see they follow Jewish, that old Jewish law. Same thing would happen, right? You say somebody molested me, you're a great tennis player. We're dealing with people with absolute power. But that's what they did. If that's what he needs for his absolute power, he has it. And if I speak fresh to the king and I get killed, it's on me, not on him. Therefore, let me just continue to read. That means they don't get paid. Like if your daughter works in his kitchen, she's not getting $15 an hour. She's not getting 50 cents an hour. She should be lucky if she gets something to eat, because that's his right. What if he is somebody who really likes gold, a lot of gold? He likes a lot of jewels. I always had this thing for diamonds. That's not a problem. If this person has so much power, even in terms of his own people, people who are in other countries, they're going to be afraid. Look how he is with his own people. Like Biden's meeting with Putin today. Look at the difference between how we feel about Biden. Is anybody afraid of Biden? No. In Russia, are they afraid of Putin? You better believe it. Even though he has raped the country of money. He's got, no, I don't know about Biden, but he's got a tremendous, everybody knows that he has billions in Putin, has billions and billions of dollars that he took from the Russians. Nobody's going to say a word. It's still for the good. And if you speak to most Russians, they're very happy with you because Russia is secure. And they consider, if you're Russian, you consider Russia the dominant empire in the world. That's how they feel. They got that from Putin, to feel that they're the strongest country in the world. We don't feel that way because we don't think that way.
Nobody's going to tap. Became the ikar mishpatim lucha in a rock ketav hit kashrut. What is it? It is an unbinding, a binding contract between the people, the population, and the king. Mipnei zeh hu tamaktiva b'sefer la'utan ha'inyanim. V'gam hunchu mitzad ha'eved ha'brit k'mo shehaya ha'manhig mimei kedem laniach kol kitvei hitkashrut shenasu b'mamlechut ha'achevot b'makom mekudash. Everything that he does, treaties that he makes, all of these are honored. Everything he does, and he goes on to just go through many, many of the rights that a king has and many incidents where they invoke those rights. And many people were killed and much money was lost. I remember the story with Ahav and Izebel, right, and Manot. You have a very nice garden. I want it. He didn't want to give it to him. He's dead. He's dead. Next person, Ahav says, I'd like to have your garden. Who's going to say no? That is the nature. That is the nature. And therefore, what one can say is, and that's what he goes on to say, when it comes to the Chashmonaim, is that the Chashmonaim were never kings in the sense of a king like David HaMelech. Never kings in the sense of a king like Shlomo HaMelech. But what happened? They were attacked by the Greeks. The Greeks were killing them. The Greeks had edicts against them. They were persecuting them. And they could not defend themselves against the Greek army. Nobody could. But there were a group of Kohanim, not of politicians, nobody from the House, nobody from Senate. These were people in the temple. And they could not take what was taking place to the Jewish people. So they dropped their garb of the temple. And they took up swords and arrows and spears, and they saved the people from destruction. That's what the Chashmonaim did. And when they saved the people from destruction, they said, would you like us to continue to keep this country secure and independent from the Greeks? And everybody said, absolutely. You do whatever it needs to be done. So they became kings because that's the name of the ruler of a country in the time in which they lived. Whoever rules the country, whoever is in charge of the country, whoever sets policy, that is the king. But did they have the right to kill people with Moreid B'Malchut? The answer is no. They had to follow the regular law because they weren't kings that were appointed from Malchut Beit David who have all of those powers because those powers were given to the kings by the people in the time of Shmuel. So the whole institution of kings, of kingdom, of monarchy, of royalty, all of that is one thing. And then running the country, controlling the country, saving the country, securing the country, and being the leaders of the country is something which is totally different. Their duty was, as they saw it, was to rescue the people from the Greeks. So that's called a king. And that's what when the Rambam says, yeah, you can't be a king. Rambam writes, ein moshkin melech, ein moshkin kohanim lemelech. He knows that. He said that. But he did not feel that the Chashmonaim were formal kings. They were just leaders. And as leaders, good leaders, excellent leaders, and they ruled for a very, very long period of time until the destruction of the temple. Almost to the destruction of the temple. And the Rambam can justify a number of things by that. And that's what the Maharishi says the Rambam understood. He understood that was the nature of the Chashmonaim. Now, he says, and you answer another question with this. We say this on Yom Kippur. We actually say it. It's the time of the, usually it's like 3:00. So either people are very tired and they don't see it, or they already went home to rest. But when the Kohen Gadol would come out of the Kodesh Kadashim, right, and he wasn't dead, so he would have a special prayer. So what was the prayer that he would say? He would say, I pray that God should see to it that there are no kings except from the house of David ben Yishai. So Maharis Chiyah says, these were kings for a very long time. They were also the priests who went into the Kodesh Kadashim. So when they went out of the Kodesh Kadashim, could you imagine, they wouldn't pray. We don't want to be kings. We want the kings of David. So he says, no. But what they were actually was... They were sincerely praying that the throne of David HaMelech and his descendants would be restored. And that way we'd be able to get back to our regular life and give up all of the responsibilities and the burden of leadership. So of course they said that because they were never truly the kings. And that's why the Rambam doesn't feel, you don't need the acclamation of the Sanhedrin, you don't need a Navi, you don't need anybody. These were the people who were nobody else. Nobody else. There was nobody else. Otherwise, they would be decimated. Right? If you understand the Hanukkah story, they were killing Jew after Jew after Jew. Read one Maccabees, you'll see this. And it says that in one Maccabees, Matityahu said to his sons, can we allow the Jewish people and God's Torah to be destroyed? What are we, cowards? Don't we fight in the name of Mila Shem Elai? Everybody knows that he said that. That comes from that one Maccabees. Mila Shem Elai. God will help us. And everybody else cowered. Everybody was in the hills. Everybody was hiding in caves. So those were the ones who took the mantle of leadership. But they didn't want it because they realized we're priests. We're not kings. And therefore, according to the Rambam, they never violated it, says the Maccabees. And that's why all of the questions that the Ramban would have had, if he said, if anything, the Ramban has a problem because he calls them Kadoshe Elyon. And he says they were sinful for taking them out. And what, according to the Ramban, what should they have done? If they knew that they could help the Jewish people, they should just say, well, can't do that. Can't do that. Can't help the Jewish people because we're priests. We're not from the tribe of Yehuda. And that's how he answers the Ramban. So I think that we've had it's 1:29. So I think we've had a good discussion. Very good discussion. And we will meet, please God,